So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review it.
Right now, right? That's what you say. We get it by now.
Triple H and Stephanie's marriage is apparently on shaky ground.
Stephanie, I know what you walked in on last week. That looked pretty bad.
What the hell is this?
But you've got to understand that was completely innocent.
I'm so concerned over Stephanie and Triple H's relationship.
I'm sure everything will work out and it'll be all right. But I need some space right now.
If you need anything at all, anything, Stephanie, I'll always be there for you as a friend.
Kurt Angle saving Stephanie from going through the table. The hug from Kurt Angle and Stephanie King. A big hug. Triple H is livid.
Kurt and I are just friends.
Where is it written that a guy and a girl can't be just friends?
I know you're foolish.
Friends my ass, Steph.
Uh-oh. Wait a minute. Oh, no. Kurt. Oh, Stephanie. If Stephanie bouncing off the steel step. Oh, my God. Stephanie's hurt, King.
Stephanie, stay here.
I know I should go home.
No, I'll go help Kurt, all right? Just stay here.
Triple H has come out to help Kurt Angle, but he's the one who's now being destroyed. It looks like Angle's leaving the game high and dry. So much for this teamwork, this truce between Kurt Angle and Triple H, King.
I really care about you, Stephanie. You don't realize how much I care about you.
There seems to me like there's a little electricity between Stephanie and
Kurt and I are just friends.
Where is it written that a guy and a girl can't be just friends?
It's John Pollock, and he is
waiting.
That's correct.
That's how I sound like on my voicemail answer.
I've never gotten your voicemail in my life.
Is that right?
I don't think I've.
Maybe you don't call me.
I rarely call you, to be honest. You and me are text friends.
Yeah, but you know when they
there's
ask
nobody
you,
I call now that I think about it.
You know when they ask you, please say your name after the beep, like for your message. And then I go, waiting. And it's really awkward because I don't know how. I guess you say your name all the time. That's your job. You have to ID yourself before.
You say everything. Your name a lot. Actually, no.
This.
Most intros, I say your name.
Yeah. So I never actually say my name. So when I say it, waiting, it's feels weird.
Really?
I don't like saying it.
I've grown to like my name.
Yeah,
I wasn't always crazy about it.
I don't mind my name. I just don't
John like is a tough name when you're surrounded by morons in elementary school. There's the toilet joke. That's the easy one.
If you could have named yourself, like my brothers, for instance, they basically came up with their own names.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah, because like they had Chinese names, and when they came here, they were like old enough to just decide their own names. So, what would you name yourself?
Maxwell.
No, for real. Seriously?
King Maxwell.
Being serious, John, let's say you were framed for murder, you have to change your identity.
All the cool kids in my class, they were all named Mike. So I wanted to be a Mike.
So you're going from one.
Well, then my best friends, they all flocked to me too. They all became my best friends. And then it was the four of us that would always hang out. So there was part of me that kind of liked that I was the non-Mike of the four of us.
There were four Mikes that all hung
three out? Mikes and me. We were a four
wow.
four group of friends.
Oh man, if your name is DJ, you'd be three Mikes and one DJ.
Oh wow,
the Beastie Boys.
That would be very funny.
Yeah. So you'd be Mike. That's just awfully
generic. Yes.
I mean, could be even more generic than John. No offense.
Wow.
Anytime you say no offense, there's a bit of offense.
There's always.
Yeah.
Just like every time somebody says, you know, it's funny. And then whatever comes after that, usually not something they find funny. They're actually very upset about it.
It's not laugh out loud funny, yeah. No, it's just more like...
It's not funny. It's funny how people always say that I'm a piece of shit. No, you don't find that funny. You're very bothered by that, obviously. You don't need to preface with, it's funny.
Funny.
I can see through you.
Huh. It's funny that...
Listen to the next time someone prefaces it with, it's funny. And then listen after.
Yeah.
No, probably not funny to you. Might be funny to me, but not you who is saying this.
Yeah. I think every stand-up comedian should start off their joke with, you know, it's funny.
No, they should do the opposite. It's serious. And then go into something hilarious.
Yes, right.
I watched the greatest thing ever on Thursday Night Way. It was an impact. I was out at a bar, and I got to watch Usain Bolt win the 200 meters.
Right.
Spoiler. Spoiler. Didn't watch it yet, man. This guy is unbelievable. I watched his 100-meter win last Sunday, and then I just happened to be here at a bar when the 200 meters began. Everyone's going nuts for Andre DeGrasse. It's almost as though it's two races going on. It's a foregone conclusion. Usain Bolt is going to win this. And this becomes a very competitive race if you take him out of it. He was just so far ahead of everybody. Mm. He is unbelievable to watch.
Yeah.
When I am old and there's some other world's fastest man, I'll be that old guy who will be like, yeah, he's no Usain Bolt, even if the guy surpasses him. This guy's incredible, Way.
Yeah, I believe it.
I think he's the most impressive athlete in the world, ahead of Michael Phelps. People are debating what's more important? What Michael Phelps has won and his 23 medals, is it? Mm. Or Usain Bolt? And to me, it's just, you watch Usain Bolt, I feel like I'm watching a superhuman. He is a superhuman.
Is that his real name?
I assume so.
Bolt?
It's a great name.
Yeah, what?
Maybe he chose it.
How convenient.
Yeah, that's what I would choose. Bolt Pollock.
I mean, it sounds like a wrestler's name for a really fast wrestler.
Yeah. Guy's only like 29 years old.
Yeah, that's like already old for the Olympics.
I know. I don't know if he's done after these games or not, but I think he could. He's so good, he could come back in 4 years, and I still think he would win at 32, 33, whatever he would be.
Michael Phelps is done.
Michael Phelps has said he is done, yes. But what do you do after that? Speaking engagements?
Yeah.
Swim meets?
I don't know.
Like, the life of an Olympian is just, you'd put all of this time and effort into these moments. And then what next?
Reality shows.
Is Michael Phelps, like, what's he going to be on?
I don't know.
Going to be the Bachelor?
Oh, I'm thinking of, what's her name?
Her name?
Yeah.
Oh, the female
Olympian.
Oh, her.
No. The former Bruce Jenner.
Caitlyn Jenner.
Caitlyn, yes.
So, someone that did transition past their Olympic fame. I've been watching Donovan Bailey doing analysis of the...
Of the running.
The running.
Yeah.
All the different versions.
Okay, and what does he say?
Here's another guy.
Yeah.
Guy was one of the biggest athletes ever for a Canadian. That guy was iconic in 1996.
Yeah.
What's he done in 20 years? I couldn't tell you. I don't know.
Probably nothing public, but I'm sure he's, got maybe he's a trainer or something.
Training runners.
Yeah.
I don't know where the money is in that. Training runners.
I don't know. I have no idea.
Okay. You're not very interested in the back end of these athletes' careers.
There's nothing I could possibly say about any of this that would sound that would sound smart at all. Because I don't know shit about running or training runners.
You know who really transitioned well? And within an Olympic cycle? Was in a completely different industry.
Kurt Angle.
1996, Olympic gold medalist. And by the time the Sydney Games rolled around, Kurt Angle was knee-deep in a feud with Triple H and getting set for his first WWF title win in October.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he was doing. We're going to chat about SummerSlam 2000 today, and Way doesn't even know this yet. We're going to be joined by three guests on this show.
Oh, wow. Okay, I should make some space here.
Yep. They're all going to be joining us digitally.
Okay.
I'm going to surprise you when they stop by.
Okay.
You don't know who they're going to be, but they all competed on this card in August of 2000 in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Interesting.
Well, cool. Yes. Who will it be? Everyone listening to this knows because it's in the description, but Wei doesn't know.
I have no
clue.
So
you're one step ahead of Wei.
Is it Too Cool? All three members of Too Cool?
Couldn't get Terry or the Cat. That's the only spoiler. We couldn't get them to break down there.
Terry or the Cat? Oh, so Perry Saturn you got?
Nope.
Al Snow?
Nope.
Head. I don't give a shit. I don't give a shit anymore.
August the 27th of 2000. A very interesting pay-per-view. One that is remembered, I feel, for being the event that housed the very first TLC match. The official first TLC match. I guess we had the ladder matches that predated these. And the second three-way involving these two on a major pay-per-view in the year 2000 as they had to top themselves from WrestleMania earlier that year, and I think we can look in hindsight way that the TLC match certainly has overshadowed their ladder match from WrestleMania that year.
Absolutely. When you go back and think about these three guys, you only say TLC. You don't say, nobody really talks about that ladder match. I mean,
even though it included everything.
Mm-hmm.
It had tables, it had ladders, it had chairs, and it had longer time as well.
Yeah. Didn't have the branding.
No, it did not. That's a key lesson.
Mm-hmm.
If without Mick Foley and the Oh My, which didn't really follow future TLC matches with the Oh My.
Yeah.
This show did 570,000 buys, which was slightly down from the year prior, which had Jesse Ventura as the guest referee at SummerSlam, but still a very strong number. And the opening video package was a production from Freddie Fellini. Freddie Blassie. And here is Blassie just watching film, grainy film at that, of all the buildup to the WWF's SummerSlam event. This was on a very grainy USA Network feed that Freddie Blassie had in 2000, I guess.
Sure. Freddie Fellini. Yeah.
Yes, Freddie Fellini. A lot of this was centered around Triple H, Kurt Angle, and Stephanie, and the love triangle that was going on at the time, and the big angle, which you were not given more than 10 minutes on this show from forgetting, the kiss that happened on the SmackDown leading into this show, where Stephanie got her head bumped in the ring, was brought to the back. Kurt then went to tend to her and closed it by kissing Stephanie, who at first was reluctant and then embraced Kurt.
Yeah.
So what a...
I think we all remember that. I thought this video was really interesting. I thought it was far more art house and surrealist. I mean, it was supposed to... trying to copy a Fellini movie, I suppose. And I thought it was actually really cool for an opening video that we're typically used to hearing, you know, a drowning pool or whatever, for them to kind of go this route. And I'm assuming this was a David Sahadi production as well at this time. I thought it was really cool. I liked it as a one-off.
It's funny. Exactly 1 year after, at the next SummerSlam event, their opening video was Freddie Blassie in a similar setting watching this.
Yep.
And then it goes into Let the Bodies Hit the Floor, because that was the theme song.
Yeah, so...
I loved when they would use Freddie Blassie for these things. He was just... I always enjoyed him in these. He was... They would frequently use him for different commercials and pay-per-view openings. And our title sponsor, Wei, for this Sunday SummerSlam, we've got KFC. And for this SummerSlam, Chef Boyardee fronting the bill.
Hmm.
Jim Ross plugs that.
What is that? I mean, why is it? I guess it's always like unhealthy foods that have all the money, right?
Yeah, volume supply.
Yeah,
you know, they have money to spend, and they clearly saw that this pay per view audience of 570,000 homes, probably a lot of Chef Boyardee homes there, potential customers. Gate of over $1.1 million, and what did you think, Wei, as someone that pays attention to style aspects of a show, the lower graphics for everyone, they ditched the uppercase letters. It was all lowercase.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Sure.
What an interesting choice. Yeah.
It's like a lot of people's usernames at the time. Like if you're on ICQ, a lot of people just like, they didn't use uppercase, or maybe they use the random casing, or
what was your ICQ number? Can you remember it?
Yeah, I do, actually. I won't say it here.
It's why not
private.
You're still using it every now and then. Mm-hmm. Still get the.
What's yours?
For the longest time, I could remember mine. I actually, at some point, had some business cards, and I put my ICQ number on it. What a 2000.
What was your? Did you have a name? What was your nickname?
I can't remember. Yeah, I think I just had my name. I think it was just John Pollock.
Oh, okay.
I think that was it.
Sure. Oh, there wasn't Mike.
It was it was Maxwell Bolt. Zero to lowercase BB. They also highlighted Jim Ross's injured right eye from a glass attack by Taz. This was 2000 in every sense of the angles building up these matches. It's like every match had something crazy to necessitate this match at the SummerSlam card, including Jim Ross's face nearly being decapitated by Taz a few days before on SmackDown. Mm-hmm. And boy, would there be some revenge coming from good old JR.
Yeah.
The show kicked off with RTC, the Right to Censor, Steven Richards, Bull Buchanan, and the Good Father, as the WWF took their public feud with the PTC, the Parents Television Council, into a heel act against Rikishi and Too Cool. And Richards gets onto the mic and speaks about the people here in the Bible Belt and thinking they would have more morality. But then the music interrupts them, and at this point, of course, the Good Father had ditched the hose. So the hose needed a new home, and they had joined Rikishi and Too Cool, including Victoria. As JR says, it's all about having fun.
Yeah.
They just want to have fun
with
the hose. And the hose, likewise, wanting to have fun. Scotty started this off. He hit a top rope crossbody to Bull. Grandmaster Sexay sent the Godfather to the floor. And then Victoria goes to slap him. But the Good Father knocks them to the floor and gets heavily booed. And then the crowd starts chanting, "Save the hose." If there was one pronunciation I really enjoyed, it was Jim Ross and his pronunciation of one Brian Christopher.
They may be at the concession stand.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, look at this.
And the cover by Bull Buchanan reaches back, hooks the leg, and got a near fall on Grandmaster 6A.
Grandmaster 6A. And Richards gets crotched on the top by 6A and hits a superplex. I would hate if this character was around and I had to say that name every single week reviewing it. 6A. All three men hit reverse splashes in the corner. It ends with Richards being seated in the corner. Bull takes out Rikishi with a scissors kick. Then Scotty drops down Buchanan. The worm gets cut off with a Richards super kick. And Richards pins Scotty at 5 minutes and 12 seconds. Was this the peak of Rikishi? This guy was so popular, and the entire group, the three of them, were just so over. It was mind-boggling to me watching this to know where they would take Rikishi in a few months and turn this guy, who was just such an awesome opening card act that this crowd just, they love these guys.
Yeah.
In particular, Rikishi.
Certainly this year was probably their peak, I'd say, for all three of these guys. I think once Rikishi left the group was never really the same. And then, you know,
they tried to reform it later with Rikishi and Scotty together, and they never captured what they had at this point in history.
But, man, I like this group a lot. I like Too Cool a lot. I mean, for two guys here, Brian Christopher and what's his name, Scott Taylor?
Scotty Too Hottie.
Two guys who are really floundering light heavyweights doing nothing, and I don't know if they devised, if they came up with this gimmick or if they were given this gimmick, probably a bit of both, but just a completely ridiculous off-the-wall idea of two really corny white guys trying to, do hip-hop gimmicks, I think could have
been
really
bad. Clearly the influence that John Cena drew from.
Could have been awful, but, you know, much like a broken Matt Hardy, they played it up so hard and so over the top. And we're so dedicated to it that I thought it ended up working out really well. And look at the reaction they got here. Look at a thing like the worm, you know, how it's insane. It's insane that that move got the biggest reaction of the entire match.
Oh, definitely. So the RTC gets the win. Kurt Angle is shown arriving during Sunday Night Heat, and Jonathan Coachman interviews him and asks him about taking advantage of Stephanie McMahon on SmackDown, and Angle refers to him as a fourth-string announcer. Stephanie is then shown arriving. Hunter has not arrived yet at the building. And when she's told which way Kurt Angle is, she goes in the opposite direction. Later on, we see Angle walking into her dressing room, and then we replay the kiss.
I was actually quite impressed with Steph this early on. I mean, I know that she's a great performer now, but I always remembered her as not being as good. But watching this back, she played
off of Kurt very well.
Yeah.
I thought the two of them worked extremely well together, and as well her and Hunter. Mm-hmm. As well. I don't think she's anywhere near the performer she would become. But you were right on this.
She's a different character, too, back then.
Yes. Michael Cole is with the hardcore champion, Shane McMahon, who is asked about the emotional state of Stephanie. And Shane says he supports any decision that Stephanie makes. And then he runs off as he sees Steve Blackman, Michael Myers, in the background, making his way towards Shane.
He probably would have been more popular if he had a Mike Myers gimmick.
Mm-hmm.
Like a mask or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, a miniature. I mean, they kind of went that direction with Kane, you could see. But Steve Blackman, a lot that could have been done with this man beyond just those the pants and kendo stick. Road Dogg and X-Pac had a match on this card. I can't say I have thought about this feud or match once since I probably watched this pay-per-view on August 27th of 2000. This feud began with a video of X-Pac headbutting Road Dogg, who then fell off the apron through a table on Raw, and then...
He didn't headbutt him. He chest-bumped him.
He chest-bumped him.
They were having an argument. Road Dogg was on the apron, conveniently standing feet several inches away from a table that was set up beneath him, and then via chest-bump, Road Dogg falls through the table. It looked way too convenient and just set up to be believable.
So to get revenge, we had The Undertaker on SmackDown where X-Pac left Road Dogg alone for Road Dogg to get killed. And Road Dogg cuts a quick promo that we're going to see who the best man is. X-Pac sucks champ.
Before you start, what was the state of DX at this time? Because Hunter had moved on, obviously, with Stephanie.
Yeah, I mean, there was kind of the loose affiliation still with all of them. I mean, they hadn't completely dissolved, mm-hmm. but Hunter was being put in this babyface role, somewhat pseudo-babyface role.
Against Kurt.
With Kurt, yes.
Right. And then you had Chyna, who had no longer associated with
No,
DX.
She was now paired with Eddie.
And
so
Billy Gunn was out?
Billy Gunn at this point was... Where was he? I think he was hurt at this point. Yeah. He was out with a shoulder injury for most of 2000. So.
And that leaves X-Pac and Road Dogg.
Yes.
What do we do with these two?
Yeah, Billy would come back in a few months as the one mm-hmm. Billy Gunn. So there was an X-Pac sucks champ. Road Dogg literally kicks him in the ass, and X-Pac flies all the way from the middle of the ring to the floor from this kick in the ass, Jack Gallagher style. Road Dogg misses him in the corner. Eats these kicks from X-Pac, avoids the Bronco Buster. We saw a sign that read, X-Pac sucks eggs.
Hmm.
Boof.
Okay.
Fighting words and rally. There was a sleeper and then a spinning heel kick by X-Pac. I almost called him X-Box. And he hits the Bronco Buster. Jim Ross notes how the crowd is mixed, mainly because I think they didn't know who was the heel or babyface in this, nor did they. Road Dogg fires up to a reaction, hits the shake, rattle, and knee drop, and then a pump handle is blocked, and he hits the X-Factor. That gets blocked, with a slam. There's a low blow by X-Pac, and he hits the X-Factor and pins Road Dogg in 442 as we cut to a fan wearing an unbuttoned shirt and the sign X-Pac rules. This guy looked like something else out of the year 2000. X-Pac says, "We found out who the better man is." And he offers his hand. Road Dogg just kicks him in the gut and hits the pump handle slam and leaves.
Yeah, the sodomizer.
The sodomizer version of pump the pump handle.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I thought the match was all right. I'm, you know, every time I see Sean Waltman on one of these shows, because of his reputation, I probably said this like every time that Sean Waltman comes up, but because of his reputation, I think I often, and we all often forget what a great wrestler he was, and he always impresses on these shows. He worked as a heel here, and at this point already started to get the X-Pac sucks chance. I thought they told a pretty decent story, and you know, in the end, Road Dogg turns on him and, you know, X-Pac is like the sportsman. He wants to shake hands, but...
Well, you hit him in the crotch to lead to the X-Factor.
That is true. That is true.
So Road Dogg was furious.
Yeah, that is true. Not only... Yeah, never mind.
I guess I forgot. They're degenerates. So that should be expected on Road Dogg's part for X-Pac mm-hmm. to win by any means. Then we got the strangest plug of the show. It was for Vinny's Steakhouse and Tavern.
Well, guys, if you do go to eat tonight, Road Dogg and X-Pac, let me tell you where I went last night. If there's a better steakhouse in the world than the Raleigh Landmark, you know what I'm talking about.
I do.
Vinny's Steakhouse here in Raleigh, as good a food as I have ever had in my mouth, and OJR knows something about groceries.
Even if you don't live in Raleigh, it's certainly worth the trip.
You want to know the backstory on Vinny's Steakhouse and Tavern in North Carolina, Way?
Yeah, I do.
Apparently, it's a restaurant that when it launched, some of the financing came from North Carolina's own Vince McMahon.
Oh, you're kidding. So it's named after Vince?
I think so, yes.
Is it still around?
We should go.
How do you know this?
This was in the Observer at the time that I was doing my research for SummerSlam 2000. And JR put this over as the best food I have ever had in my life. And I know something about food, he says.
Really?
So really, this is a guy who's got like a cookbook out. I mean, he's really putting his credibility out there.
I know.
Putting this Vinny's Steakhouse and Tavern over to the degree he did. Eddie Guerrero and China are backstage, as they are romantically linked. Eddie says he is not the jealous type and wants China to be happy. And China says one of us is going to get lucky tonight because they have a tag match with Intercontinental Champion Val Venus and Trish Stratus. A tag match where whoever gets the fall will be the Intercontinental Champion.
Including Trish.
I don't know how that worked with Trish. I would imagine...
Doesn't matter.
Who cares? That wasn't a fact. That's a great question. Val Venus is with Trish. Val Venus had been stripped of everything that made him Val Venus, except for the name Val Venus.
Yeah, we talked about this in the Fully Loaded review.
Yes.
This is kind of Val right before the right to censor in sort of the generic Val Venus.
White trunks, white boots.
Yeah.
And you say Fully Loaded. This guy's physique was Fully Loaded. He came out.
He's always been a pretty big guy.
Yeah, he always was pretty jacked.
So
this was like his shoulders were extending into South Carolina.
Yeah.
From Markham, Ontario. So they're in the locker room, Val and Trish questions if China is centerfold material or not, and who Val would rather see in Playboy between the two of them. And Venus says tonight isn't about that. It's about the IC title, and Trish better carry her part. And Trish says, he wouldn't even have the title without me.
It's still kind of jarring to me to see Trish in 2000, because when I think of Trish, what comes to mind is this, you know, strong female babyface lead. And to see her, to be reminded that she started off like any other diva, you know, pretty much sort of as a, like a Lana or an Eva Marie girly type is, you know, I don't often remember that.
I forgot to tell you during that 24 special this week, the most jarring thing in that entire feature was Lana minus the accent.
Oh, they actually showed her.
Yeah, she was on a number of times speaking without the accent, and it was jarring.
So I would assume on Total Divas she's not going to
I would assume it's going to be gone.
Which is great. I mean, I feel like she'll probably slowly shed it anyway.
You know what's crazy is that I guess the taping is done, but can you imagine this season of Total Divas with Eva Marie, Paige, and Del Rio?
Yeah. I don't know how honest they would be with any of that stuff. Also, what's his name? Jonathan.
What's the update from Jonathan? I understand he had some...
He just posted about how he posted on his Twitter. He was defending his wife saying, you know, when people realize what my wife got suspended for, they will feel very sorry or like, I don't know. They'll feel really bad for her or something. I don't know.
Then they should put it out. I completely disagree with the idea that you don't reveal the substance.
They're allowed to do that? Anytime?
The performers can do whatever they want.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you could be...
Is it in bad taste, though? Like, would it look bad to do it in front of the company? Like, why didn't Roman Reigns...
If it was my reputation on the line, if I had failed for something that...
Do you think...
When someone gets popped, everyone assumes the worst. They assume, whatever, steroids. It just leads to a mountain of speculation. And if I'm a performer and that's what the husband is saying,
yeah.
then I'm releasing it so that people know exactly what I was caught for, and there's no speculation about what I was doing.
So were there rumors that Roman Reigns was like busted for like something for ADHD or something like that?
Yeah, that was the rumor that was there.
So the fact
but he's never said that.
The fact that he doesn't say it, do you think that either means that it wasn't something that innocent, or could it be? Could it be them, you know, purposely not saying it to prove to the company, hey, I can take this and not have
I
to
I think
give
it's
excuses.
Just not wanting to rock the boat with the company who does not release right. substances, and they're not going to put themselves out there.
And don't you think Eva Marie might be doing the same?
Who knows? If I believe that it was for something very trivial that I was caught for, that was maybe necessary for me to be taking, if I had a doctor's note for it, if there was a legitimate reason, and there may or may not be, but if there's a legitimate reason and everyone is out there, like when I posted that story, the comments I got from people, there's awful people out there who are just like dancing on this woman's grave that she got caught. It's disgusting. But if I feel I was wronged here, yeah, I'm going to make it clear. This is what I was caught for. You can judge all you want. This is it. So at least you have the facts.
Who knows? Maybe we'll find out next season on Total Divas.
Oh, it'd be a great season. So then we had, an announcement that the next night, and for the next 2 weeks, Raw would be on at 11 p.m. Eastern time because of the U.S. Open tennis coverage on USA. And Lawler saying that we're able to get more Raw the later we are on. Could you imagine, Wei, reviewing Raw that starts at 11 p.m.? I'm too old for this.
Yeah, I feel bad for anybody in the U.K. I mean, they have to watch Raw at, what, like 4 a.m.?
Well, I guess, yeah, that would be even tougher,
yeah.
I assume.
Or two.
I looked at the ratings, though, what they did. I mean, the main event on the next night's Raw was Rock and Kane. So they get into the ring like almost 1 in the morning. And they did like some phenomenal number, like a 4.8 or something like that. Wow. It was crazy how popular they were in the summer of 2000 where they went on that late. And Nitro would have been unopposed the next night. There was a video of China powerbombing Val Venus off the apron to the floor, and then Trish breaking a glass jar on China's head, which I guess that was the gimmick of choice for August of 2000. I mean, kind of getting our programs crossed here.
A lot of spare glass?
I guess so. Yeah. These candy jars were a problem in the workplace. They were not going too many days without workplace incidents here in 2000. Val Venus and Trish Stratus took on Eddie Guerrero and... Val Venus and Trish Stratus against Eddie Guerrero and China for the IC title. Guerrero and Venus started the match, and he caught the leg of Venus, turned it around into a China clothesline. How did you feel China looked in this match?
China looked about as China-like as we've always seen. I think she, you know, is clearly very limited in the ring.
Was very over, too.
Very limited, but... with what she was able to do, she got the most out of. And her reactions here, as well as Trish's, were some of the biggest of the whole night, I thought.
Eddie hit a blue thunderbomb, or Val Venus hit a blue thunderbomb to Guerrero. Both collided in the middle. Venus then tagged Trish. There were kicks delivered to Guerrero by Trish, and then she gets swept as China's tagged in. China yanks her by the hair into the corner. Guerrero later pulls Venus to the floor and into the steps, so Venus is taken out of the match, and then China is with Trish and hits a military press slam, and then China pins Trish at 7:13 and wins the title, and Val is furious. He did not take the fall, and Trish cost her the title.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just like last month, I fully loaded. I thought there was some very effective use of Trish as the object of that the baby faces want to try to get their hands on in the tag match, but can't. So Val protecting Trish in the corner, very effective by the time China finally got her hands on her. Big reaction. There's just one spot that I just loved in this match, and that was when Val and Trish were double-teaming China. They both Irish whip her into the ropes. And then from the outside, Eddie trips Val from the outside of the ring. So in the rebound, it's only Trish coming back now towards China. And so China, with, you know, now the bigger person in this whole thing, just stonewalls Trish, and Trish just falls down. I thought it was just such a really clever, almost Three Stooges type of spot that I thought was so brief but brilliantly laid out and made China look like a badass.
Trish also had to work in those boots that she wore that were just looked like the worst things to be doing a match in.
Yeah, I know. But Trish, you know, despite being like a far earlier version of what she ended up being, I thought played a focal role in both of the matches this month and last month, and I thought she far exceeded expectations of, you know, a valet type of person in a match.
And just look, month to month, we were talking about Fully Loaded and how she was going to outgrow TNA. Here we are a month later. Now she's in this IC title program with China. Mm-hmm. And shortly thereafter, I mean, into 2001, suddenly she's in the big McMahon family angle as well. So she was rapidly ascending.
She also had a role in Love Triangle with Triple H.
Yes, that's right. They did the segment where Triple H is teaching her a hammer lock, and Stephanie walked in and probably was so upset she went and got hammered. Jim, we had Radio WWF at WWF New York with Michael Cole and Mick Foley hosting. This was on a Saturday night, and you know where Mick Foley was Saturday morning before SummerSlam way.
Sunday morning, you mean?
No, this was Saturday night.
Oh, okay.
Saturday morning, where Mick Foley was.
The Law.
Nope. I was being driven to my place of work by my dad to Canada's Wonderland, Paramount Canada's Wonderland then, and I was dropped off at the employee entrance, and I got out, and I'm walking, and this limo blocks my way in, and out walks Mick Foley from the limo.
Wow, what was your face like?
It's like, Christ, I'm going to go talk to him. So I went up and I said, hi.
I can get this from a Jaws Audio Wrestling show.
Oh, I should have. I knew he was appearing too. He was doing some like meet and greet Q&A thing at Wonderland that day. And then I guess being taken to New York for that evening. So I talked to him briefly and then I had to go in. I had to get to my workplace. And the supervisor gave me shit. It's like, you do not talk to people. He is here for his own reason. You are to go to your workplace. That was unprofessional.
What did you say to Foley? Like, what did you say to Foley? What did you
I can't remember what I said. Oh. I think I just said hello or whatever. Pleasure to meet you. Okay, something like that.
So you got in trouble?
Yeah, I got like scolded for talking to this VIP.
It's like, don't they know who you are?
I said,
and you're like,
do you know who I'm going to be, miss?
I'll show you.
Yeah.
Wow, anyway. That's a great story.
Yeah. So anyway, and he was wearing that same Twins jersey that he had on that night and the next day at the pay-per-view. There's no one who gets more out of his clothing attire than Mick Foley. I mean, he gets life out of whatever he is given.
Yeah.
So anyway, they had this Radio WWF thing, which sounded... This featured a call-in from The Rock as he cut a promo and sang with Mick Foley on the radio.
Seemed like the biggest budget podcast I'd ever heard.
I don't know what would be... I mean, for a fan to go to WWF New York to watch a radio taping, I guess there's something to that. You get to see Mick Foley.
We've asked people to come and see us talk.
I mean, this, though, it's like they're taking calls. Yeah, there's like the big talent is calling in on the radio.
Yeah, but it's also Mick Foley there.
Yeah, yeah, I guess. There's a certain...
And Michael Cole.
I just imagine. If you were a super fan, though...
Yeah.
You're probably planning to go to WWF New York for SummerSlam, right? Are you also dedicating your Saturday night to this, too, to go listen to Radio WWF?
Dude, yes.
You would have gone to this.
Not me, but I'm saying there are plenty of people out there for WrestleMania weekend, SummerSlam weekend right now that are spending multiple nights.
Well, back at that time, I think Saturday night, they would have had to get home in time to listen to The Law. The real show.
Yeah.
The real. Get the real.
What time was The Law on? Back then.
In 2000.
It used to be on Saturday afternoons, too.
See, this was when... Summer of 2000, I want to say, is right near the end of being on The Fan. So they were on... I think it was, like, Saturday nights at this point. And then they would go to 640, like, shortly thereafter. Hmm. So this might have been when they were doing two shows a week, actually. Anyway, Stephanie and Janet, hairdresser, the wardrobe person, are gossiping about Kurt. And Janet is noting that, or Stephanie says that Kurt kissed her and not the other way around. But all the girls have been debating. And Janet wants to ask Stephanie, is Kurt a hunk or is Kurt a hottie? And Stephanie admits that Kurt is a very good kisser. What did you think?
What kind of a debate would that be? Hunk or hottie? Aren't they the same thing?
Well, I would say a hottie would infer that he looks nice, but he's very surface-level attractive, whereas a hunk is maybe more something more complete.
I don't know.
Let's get some definitions, what?
No, I don't care enough.
Yeah, we definitely care.
Oh.
Hunk? Definition. It's really loud outside.
No, you know,
isn't it?
I feel like no one's going to listen to this show anyway.
No one's listening anyway.
Because.
Oh, yeah, my internet's down. So
everybody's so busy doing everything else this weekend.
Hunk or hottie? People should vote.
Hunk. I'm going to say hunk.
Okay. Ross and Lawler go through the next match and get it ready, and it's going to be Jerry Lawler involved in this match. And he goes through this candy jar and pretty much telegraphs that this candy jar is here, guys. Just saying. After we saw it clearly being used earlier by Trish and China.
What exactly did he do? Was he just like, hey, JR, you want some candy?
Lawler made a joke about some kisses inside the candy jar or whatever. It's pretty much saying, hey, look at this jar. It's just sitting here. Foretelling. So we then get the build-up to this match involving Jerry Lawler and Taz, where Taz was bullying Jim Ross and used the line, I'd love to slap you across the face, but it looks like God already beat me to it.
Hmm.
So high marks in taste.
Yeah. You know, it was its time. And look at the people involved here. Look, it's Jerry Lawler, the same guy who was okay with people using his mother right after her death as part of a storyline.
Okay,
the guy's very old school.
But to be fair, Jim Ross and just about everybody in the WWF that spoke about it, how insulted were they when Ed Ferrara did this on the other guy's show? But it's okay for us to do
it. But they didn't have his blessing. I'm sure this was okayed with Jim Ross himself beforehand.
I mean, it was a heel line. So
yeah, and I thought Taz did a great job playing this instigator, playing the bully.
Taz was great.
Yeah.
I thought Taz was just awesome in this bully role.
This was definitely shades of like the ECW, FTW type of Taz.
Which everyone wanted. I think everyone was so, like, he had that awesome debut, tremendous introduction, and it went nowhere fast. Mm-hmm. And I think this was truly the last hope, I think, for a lot of people that we were going to get a version of Taz that everybody wanted to see. Yeah. But in many ways, this was kind of it for him in terms of a big program, because he would be transitioned into a commentator primarily mm-hmm. the following year. It's still doing in-ring, but, I mean, his future was much more at a desk.
Yeah, and I think even looking at this feud, he's feuding with the announcers. You know, hardly the main event level.
Not even beating the announcers.
Hardly the kind of main event level hopes that I think a lot of ECW fans had. But you look at the guy and you think about how Vince McMahon would have thought at the time to see a man this size. Simply to somebody like Vince McMahon, it would not have been believable, or I don't believe Vince would have ever put this guy in that main event role, suplexing guys like, you know, The Rock or The Big Show.
This was also reprising a very famous angle with Don Morocco bullying Gordon Solie, and then Roddy Piper standing up for Gordon Solie and then doing his turn back in 1982. So it led to Ross striking him, and then Lawler, this is in the angle building it up, clocks Taz with this awesome punch. And, I mean, you can say what you want. This crowd just, they loved Jerry Lawler and standing up for Jim Ross. Like, this was, to me, the embodiment of how beloved this announce team was. Yeah. I don't think you'd have a prayer of this kind of love for
Michael Cole.
Michael Cole. I don't think you could do it with Cole. No. I don't know if you'd get the emotion this level that Jim Ross was. I mean, you can put him on the level of just simply his work, but like, this man was truly loved by this audience.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing him get bullied, and then Lawler, who is typically the foil for Jim Ross, standing up for his friend here, it certainly got people's emotion into this match. And then the angle was Jim Ross in the passenger side of a car with Taz then smashing the window with a bat and the glass flying into Jim Ross's eye. Like, this was crazy. The level of, like, violent angles they were shooting, like, up and down the show.
Yeah, yeah. The level of props used, we don't really get this anymore. But it's I guess it's just always funny to me whenever they put Jim Ross in these really wacky situations. Like, here he's kidnapped by Taz and put into trapped inside a car.
In many ways, he was ultimate babyface to this audience.
Well, he's like the princess that Mario has to save. You know what I mean? That's exactly what Jim Ross is like.
So Lawler is Mario, yeah. And Taz is Koopa.
Yeah, okay. Bowser.
What am I thinking of? Koopa.
They're Koopas. They are.
Oh,
Koopas.
Those were the little things.
He's
right?
King Koopa.
King Koopa.
But his name is Bowser.
Bowser. Yeah. Thank you so much for that.
No problem.
History lesson. So the match begins. Taz comes out with a cowboy hat and a walking stick, pretending that he's blind to mock Jim Ross's injured eye. Like, Taz was really great. This role.
Yeah.
Taz against Jerry Lawler. Lawler got the best reaction of anyone up until this point in the show. Mm-hmm. I mean, he got one of the best reactions, period, mm-hmm. on this show. Lawler gets up, attacks him from the floor, big Jerry chant. Lawler hits him with fists off the turnbuckle, misses on the second one, leading to Taz getting on the attack. He headbutted Lawler low, and then Taz misses a somersault dive off the top.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I've ever seen Taz jump off the top rope. He did it like a senton bomb.
Yeah. I mean, he was going all out here in his 4.5-minute SummerSlam match. Lawler brings the straps down, hits his pile driver, and Taz, channeling Road Warrior Hawk, pops right up and yells, "Fuck you," which was censored on the network.
Yeah.
And Lawler then gets sent into the referee, and Taz threatens to come after Jim Ross. And Lawler gets caught by the Taz mission, and this is when Jim Ross stands up. He grabs the candy jar, and he wallops Taz on the head for the biggest pop on the show up until this point. And the referee comes to. Lawler pins Taz. Jerry Lawler pins Taz in 424. This crowd erupts, and Jim Ross is back on the mic. Yells, "Son of a bitch!" And Taz is sliced up on the crown of his head. Lawler stands triumphant on the desk, and Ross's hand is bleeding. So I didn't understand it. Like, I didn't buy that this was glass, but this was not fully gimmicked. If it was pretty poorly. Like, these guys were cut up, man.
I guarantee it was gimmicked glass, and I'm assuming
but
Taz...
But it still cut them badly.
I'm assuming Taz bladed.
I don't think he did, man. It was the top of his head.
Oh, okay.
That was bleeding. Yeah, it wasn't like the typical forehead or anything like that. And Ross's like pinky finger was like sliced up. They're making jokes about it later. He's getting blood all over the place as he's doing commentary.
Mm.
This was a hard way candy jar blood. But man, this reaction was incredible.
Yeah. I thought it was actually a fun little feud. And, you know, I thought Taz played a great instigator. And Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler, you had two very... very over baby faces. The match itself, what do you have to say about it? It's like it's a Jerry Lawler match, lots of punches.
And they hadn't gone to the well too often with Jerry Lawler leaving the booth for a blood feud. And this, they were so into it. But I think everybody assumed this was Taz killing Jerry Lawler. And instead, it was
Jim Ross killing Taz.
Exactly.
Which got a tremendous reaction, and I can't hate on this because I thought look at the reaction that it received live. It was just a nice little bit of karma, you know, to have the glass, the guy who had glass in his eye, do the same to Taz, and Taz made sure to sell it by saying to the camera, "Ah, my eye, he got glass in my eye." So I thought it was just probably not very good for Taz's main event hopes, but it was a satisfying little mid-card feud, I thought.
Well, the next night on Raw, I actually went and I watched the Raw the SummerSlam.
Oh, please tell.
So they get into it again, and this time Taz is in a hardcore match, and he goes and threatens them again, and Jim Ross takes a trash can lid. I don't think I've ever seen a trash can lid hit a man's head with the velocity that Jim Ross threw he just extended his arm like he was Conor McGregor with a water bottle
oh
and
my God.
Walloped him in the top of the head. It Jeez. Is
Like, granted, a trash can lid, it's like, it makes a big sound. This thing hit him so damn hard. It was nuts. Oh, and this feud would continue. They get another pay-per-view match out of this the following month in Philadelphia. Lillian Garcia finds Shane McMahon again backstage, and again, he's asked about Kurt kissing Stephanie. We've got to get to the bottom of this with Shane. And again, he runs away as Blackman runs out, and Shane runs towards the ring, and their match is about to begin. Shane won this title on the previous Raw with help from Edge and Christian, and because Mick Foley, who's the commissioner at this time, wanted Shane to get to SummerSlam, he had suspended the 24/7 rule, which was an interesting a piece of detail that they incorporated.
Didn't know you could do that.
You're the commissioner. You can do anything. Mm-hmm. So that is why Shane couldn't lose the title on SmackDown. And Blackman chases Shane as he runs into the crowd, and Jimmy Corderas has to follow them while holding the title. They use a trash can on Shane. They go back to ringside. There's a trash can lid that hits Shane in the knees. And Steve Blackman, as I guess it would have been like an 8-year-old Paige is watching, Blackman yells, "This is my house!"
And that was the moment Paige decided to become a pro wrestler.
Yes, Paige assumed the lease on the house many years later when Steve Blackman, I guess, defaulted. There was a trash can delivered to Shane's head. Just lots of weapon shots here. There's a half crab applied by Blackman with a giant strap around the neck of Shane. My, how things changed in the WWF. Yeah. This was just the transition spot of choking the life out of Shane with this strap. That cued TNA, Test and Albert, to run in and help Shane. They were stomping Blackman. Test hit an elbow drop off the top to a trash can lid on top of Blackman. And this led to a chant from the rally crowd of "Shane's a pussy."
Popular chant.
Classy. They took Blackman to the entrance area. They pushed a speaker over that narrowly missed Steve Blackman. And then Albert missed Blackman and hit Test with a kendo stick as Curly and Moe were taken out of this. And Blackman attacks Shane. Shane knocks him down, and then he runs over to this metal truss of the entranceway. And Shane just starts climbing. I don't know what his exit strategy was.
Yeah.
I mean, had this not ended the way it did, I didn't know where it could have gone for Shane and this ending happy for him. So he's just climbing and climbing and climbing, and I don't have to describe it. I think everyone has probably seen this fall. Blackman follows him with a kendo stick that he had. There was a nice little, like, wrist thing there for Blackman to put the kendo stick around for climbing purposes.
Interesting.
Like, it's almost like this was planned.
Like an umbrella.
Yes. Like an umbrella. And he climbs up, and he's using the kendo stick to attack the legs, you know, because the legs open up the body. You gotta start with the legs way. And then Shane leaps off backwards and falls down. Like, seriously, this looked to be 25, 30 feet.
Yeah.
Really, I don't think that's an exaggeration. This was crazy. And lands, I don't care what was down there. For anyone that's, there was a padding. The balls to fall down and backwards, insane.
Totally insane. This fall, I mean, I think everybody's seen it at least in highlight form, in video packages, on the internet, whatever. I this fall might have been, we know Shane did the Hell in a Cell, yes, but I think this fall might have just been as high, might have probably been even higher than the Hell in a Cell that Foley fell off of. And this was at a time when it didn't get nearly as much coverage and enough press. Didn't even stand out on this show because of what followed this match right afterwards. So it was, to me, this is like one of the Shane's more forgotten stunts that just occurred in a real throwaway match without very much reason, you know, for happening.
The visual is just spectacular. It's tremendous. From the height.
Though I feel like the replays actually caught it fine, but live it didn't necessarily catch it all that great. But yeah, like a tremendous fall and a tremendous drop. I suppose if it took place away from the Titantron and maybe actually off of a cell or a cage, it might have got a, you know, been even more memorable. But yeah, it's insane. It's just Shane McMahon diving off of shit.
Was this the biggest stunt on the show for you?
I still thought they did more dangerous things in the TLC.
Yeah,
match.
Maybe. It's hard to say, but this was right up there, man. Pretty
like,
nice.
This is crazy. Yeah. I mean, I will...
It's insane.
For all the things you can say about Shane, like, I completely give him credit for the insanity that he went through in some of his matches here, and this was certainly one of the biggest. Shane's put on a stretcher, and Jim Ross says, we may have seen Shane McMahon's last match.
Yeah, and then he did the other... What was the next one he did? Or the one before this he did? Yeah.
He did one at Backlash the following year,
yeah.
Where it was similar, but that was a...
Who was that against? You remember?
Big Show. And he jumped off...
Oh, the Beanstalk. The Beanstalk.
Yes, yes. Reviewed. We reviewed that not all that long ago. Yeah. That one was more like an elbow drop, like jumping forward. This one to me was crazier because not being able to even watch your
fight. Oh, yeah. And by the way, Steve Blackman jumps off, too.
Yeah.
So nobody,
you know what? That's
remember.
A great point because I was all ready to move on.
Yeah.
You don't even remember that Steve Blackman follows this with a leg drop and pins Shane in 10 minutes and 9 seconds, and he wins back the prestigious hardcore title.
That one never gets talked about.
Which I can confirm we are getting a number of copies away of the history of the Hardcore Championship DVD that we will be giving away.
I didn't even know that was happening.
It is coming out, and we will have copies to give away.
So this match will be on it, I assume?
Maybe.
What do you think are the notable hardcore matches? I mean, I suppose the number of the 24/7 crazy
I think
matches.
You'll have equal like violent hardcore matches and comedy. Yeah. I think there'll be an equal mix of that, because that's what... When I think of the hardcore division, I mainly think Crash Holly.
Yeah.
That's the first person I think of. Hmm. I've not looked at the match listing, though, but
okay.
Maybe we will give one away or a few away for our promo of the week contest on Reviewer Raw. So you will have to cut maybe a hardcore.
You mean in addition to the t-shirt?
We could do both. You could win both. I don't want to flood a new contest. I want to make this easy to give away.
Yeah. Well, we'll announce it later.
We
got to have a board meeting.
Yes. Ross and Lawler compare this to Foley being thrown off the Hell in a Cell, and they show Stephanie in the back watching, and she is concerned about Shane. Kurt Angle comes in. This is maybe the most underrated line on the whole thing, where Kurt totally blows it off and says, yeah, I think Shane got the wind knocked out of him. I thought his delivery was so good.
Yeah.
Like, we always talk about the reason he was saddled with so much comedy is because he was so damn good at it.
Yeah.
He was just great here. Mm-hmm. And Angle hugs Stephanie just as Mick walks in and has caught them. And then Mick says that Shane landed on his kisser. There's a video package for...
Which is what, his mouth?
Yeah, I guess the play off of Shane and... of Stephanie and Kurt and their kiss.
Oh, got it, yes.
There's a video package for Chris Jericho and Chris Benoit. Do you have your Attitude Era storyline check marks or boxes to check off?
Yes, I got it right.
Okay. Garage door being shut on the ribs of Chris Jericho. Photoshop segment where Benoit's head was plastered on top of a boat or riding a boat, a goat, a baseball player, and a bride, as well as wearing a dunce cap. As a jackass.
Yeah. Yeah. Haha. 2000s Chris Jericho.
Oh,
very
boy.
Funny.
Yes. This. What did you think of this follow-up? Because these two were in very highly prominent matches at Fully Loaded, and they were moved down the card for SummerSlam. The trade-off was you get Jericho and Benoit, but I feel the 2 out of 3 falls, this was a handicap and not a benefit.
Why is that?
Because I felt we got 3 really short TV matches instead of just one nice 13-14-minute match.
I think you could look at it that way, but I mean, I just saw the whole match as a whole with, you know, two submissions in the middle. That's all.
These matches were 3, 5, and 4.5 minutes.
Yeah.
I just viewed them as 3 short matches, so maybe you and I watched them differently.
I viewed them as one long match, and that just so happened to have, you know, 2 finishes in the middle, but 2 semi-finishes. But I, as a follow-up program from last month, I really like it. I mean, how can you complain about Benoit versus Jericho? I think 2 guys with just unrivaled chemistry. You know what I mean? And if you're not going to put either man in the title program at the moment, then do a match for the hardcores and put them together.
Yeah, unlike the third guy at Fully Loaded, who was getting ready for a title program. I mean, he was just handled with pristine value at Fully Loaded with Kurt Angle and The Undertaker.
Yes.
So they immediately go at it as Benoit enters the ring. They brawled through the ropes to the floor. A lot of intensity between these two. I mean, they really conveyed that kind of street fight with these two. Benoit sent Jericho into the post. Jericho stops an STF and a crossface, goes through the walls, but then catapults Benoit into the corner. There's a released German to Benoit, a lion salt, but Benoit gets the knees up and applies the crossface, and Jericho taps out at 3:14. And there is a psychology to this, that you're tapping out so early because you need to preserve yourself for two falls.
Yes.
And why injure that body part when you need to come back and win two falls now. Benoit,
there's no break in between the falls.
No, they just went rapid fire into.
So it was smart here for Benoit to go back immediately to the crossface after the bell had just rung.
Benoit, as Wei said, goes immediately for the crossface, and Jericho fights to the bottom rope, and Benoit starts working the shoulder, puts him in the tree of woe, and pulls back on the neck, puts Jericho's shoulder first, sends it into the post. Lawler says, Jericho is just too stupid to quit. He's Canadian, you know. And Jim Ross informs him, well, Benoit's also Canadian. And Lawler just moved on. Jericho had a roll through to a counter and then applied the walls of Jericho for a big reaction, pulls Benoit into the middle, and at 5:11 of the second fall, Benoit ties it up with the walls of Jericho. Final fall, there is a top rope.
Jericho tied it up.
Jericho tied it, sorry. There's a top rope reverse elbow by Jericho, and then Jericho bridges from underneath and hits Benoit with a dragon suplex, which it's not every day you see a dragon suplex in a WWF ring.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're not going to see one too often, unless, I guess, with Sami Zayn and Owens. They did, like, the half Nelson in some of their matches.
The CWC.
They stop. Jericho stops Benoit on the top, hits a top rope Hurricane Rana. He's selling his shoulder, and Lawler predicts Chris is going to win this match. Jericho hits a lion's salt, but hurts his shoulder in doing so. He goes for a schoolboy. Benoit reverses it and cradles him while grabbing the bottom rope for leverage and gets the pin at 4:28.
Yeah, a really excellent match from these two. I mean, what can you say? I think these are long-time rivals with excellent chemistry in ring, and they both looked really great.
Triple H arrives. He will be here for the main event, a very late arriver. And just in case you forgot, they replayed the kiss from SmackDown, and then they show Kurt's hug from earlier in the dressing room. There's a video package for the TLC match and the history between the three teams, and then Mick Foley making the match, and then we got the weapon montage of all montages. Every imaginable use of a weapon involving these six in the lead up to this match. So we have Edge and Christian defending the tag titles against the Hardys, who are from North Carolina, and the Dudley Boys. So the Hardys run down to start the match, and chairs are immediately in use. The ladders are brought in quickly as well. Bubba hits a Bubba Bomb to Christian off the two ladders that are set up, and then Edge knocks Jeff off the ladder and does the teeter-totter spot that sends the ladder right into Matt's face.
Oh, man, that always scares me, especially ever since the
Joey Mercury
one, man. Oh, that is such a dangerous...
Yeah, dangerous, and it's not even one that gets that same kind of reaction. Like, it's not a visual stunt, it's just a, my God, this could go terribly wrong.
Yeah.
Like, kind of spot.
Yeah.
They did the what's up headbutt to Edge, and then they call for the tables, which got a big reaction with the weapons all introduced into the match. There was a 3D to Christian through a table, and then Bubba yells, "Devon, let's kill them," as he places two tables on top of two others on the floor, and they kind of just left those four tables. What could they possibly be used for later on? Edge hits these two just disgusting chair shots to the head of each Dudley. Matt hits a leg drop off the ladder to Edge, and then Jeff leapfrogs over the ladder into a leg drop on top of Edge. Matt sends Christian off the top as Edge is sandwiched inside a ladder. This crowd was so hot for this. I mean, what they were watching, and as the guys are just escalating and escalating the risk. Jeff missed a swanton off the massive ladder on the floor as Bubba got out of the way. Everyone is down. Bubba climbs the big ladder inside. Edge and Christian tip it, and Bubba plummets through the four tables that are set up on the floor as Jimmy Corderas checks on Bubba. This was just, if you're talking about visual bumps, this one was spectacular.
Yeah. And it's not the first time he, it's not the only time he would take it. He took it at TLC 2, the same spot with somebody else, with another body.
Yeah, and there was a story in the Hardys book where Matt originally wanted to do this bump mm-hmm. with Bubba, mm-hmm. and Bubba just thought it was too risky because if one of them hits before the other, oh, the second guy is fucked.
True.
And
but at TLC 2, that's exactly what they did.
Did they do it with both
people.
Of them?
Yeah.
Well, in this one, I think it was they ended up with just Bubba taking the bump. Huge heat here as Edge and Christian start to climb the ladders, and Lita runs down, tipping the ladder to another huge reaction.
Yeah.
Matt starts climbing the ladder, and Devon tips it backwards, and this, to me, this was the scariest thing I watched on this show, was Matt going backwards mm. to the floor, through the tables. There was no margin for error with his neck oh. that close to snapping on the barricade.
Inches, inches, inches.
This
away.
Was frightening.
Get up there, man. You got the doors open. Oh, look down. Let's go. And up on Devon. Here comes Devon. And here comes Devon. And Devon. Oh, my God. No, 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 no. Oh, my God. No. 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 Matt Hardy just went off backwards. He just went off backwards.
This was the yeah. scariest thing I watched.
It might have even made contact. I don't know. But the not to be outdone, oh, Lita checking
Jesus
up on
Christ.
Her.
This was awful.
Lita is on the outside checking up on Matt. And then the referees are still trying to scramble to check on Matt to make sure that he was okay. You see Corderas like throwing up the fist. What does the fist mean? Not the X, but the fist. What does that mean? We'll have to ask Jimmy.
Yeah, we will... I think it just
means he's okay, right?
Yeah.
I guess. Okay, anyway, so the referees are still doing all this. And then the referees part out of the way, and in comes Edge from out of nowhere. Spear right to Lita on the floor, and Lita hits her head on the top of a ladder, on a laid-down ladder, as she's getting speared. And she's holding her head, and man, that didn't look nice either.
It was like the Spirit of Beulah at One Night Stand, where he just destroys her because of the size. I mean, it looks great, but that was without a ladder that Beulah was falling near. This one, yeah, Lita hits the edge of her head on this ladder, and it just looked awful to watch. So, and Jim Ross is just disgusted, calling him a son of a bitch for what he did. Mm-hmm. Jeff and Devon then climb, and both end up holding on to the cables with the ladder removed from underneath them. And Devon is notorious for being afraid of heights. So this just was the scariest thing in the world for this guy, who takes a back bump falling off of this. And then Edge and Christian use the ladder to nail Jeff to fall down to the mat. Everyone's out. Edge and Christian are slowly climbing up, and they grab the titles at 14 minutes and 49 seconds. This is utter insanity. Ross says he has never seen anything like this, and this is a match that, I mean, when you think of this era, this is one of the matches you think of.
Absolutely.
An iconic match.
It really is an iconic, classic match. I mean, yes, in hindsight, these are spot fests, but they're the best types of spot fests, I think, because there's a ton of care put into it. It's I mean, a lot of there's a lot of creativity put into it, and there's a lot of escalation of risk, of energy, of pacing that I really think made these matches stand out from your typical hardcore matches. I think the risks that we see these guys take, I'm just amazed that none of these guys are like seriously paralyzed or anything like that, because there are a number of instances, not just in all the matches, but in this match alone, where a dude could have broken his neck, somebody could have suffered a serious concussion that would have ended their careers far earlier. I'm amazed at the amount of risks they took and the amount of precision that they were able to execute almost everything in.
It's like you watch this match, and I mean, it sounds kind of dark to just look at, well, which one of these guys is going to be the most messed up from all of this?
Sure, of course.
My pick is Jeff Hardy.
Oh, yeah.
Who is doing the most of any of these six today. I mean, this guy is just routinely, like last week on Impact, he's jumping through a table on the floor.
Look at the final deletion, man. The guy did a thing off of the
motorcycle,
the tree.
Screw up.
Swanton off a tree.
I mean, it's... Anyway, this is where we're going to hear from two of the participants in this match. The first one is Jeff Hardy. This was in 2003, talking about his health and escalating things to where they couldn't even top things in the TLC, speaking with Jeff Merrick, then of Live Audio Wrestling, about this match.
When you're talking about, like, what do you do next, you know, after you've done such a great job at a match or whatever, like those TLC matches, I feel that we have kind of ruined the TLC match because I don't know how it would be topped. You know, I don't know what we would do next because it was so hard, you know, discussing those and topping like the first ones we did and everything. So,
is there one that stands out in your mind that you're most proud of?
Probably the one from Raleigh, North Carolina, like our home. Like I think it was TLC 2 or whatever. It was the first one that we hung from the gimmicks or whatever that were holding the belts. And like that was my idea in the very first ladder match at No Mercy in like whatever year that was. And like, but they weren't strong enough to hold a human body. So. That felt good. It always feels good to have a vision and then to see it, you know, real on TV.
That bump's dangerous too. I mean, once you're hanging on to the, you know, hanging on to the tag team titles, and then you take that bump.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that to me is almost the scariest bump in all of those TLC matches.
Yeah, that's
that's the final spot, knowing that okay, you know what, the big huge bump is coming up right at the end.
Are you talking about that spear when Edge speared me off of those?
Yeah,
I love watching that, man. Like at the time, you know, it naturally hurt and everything, but man, just. That's such a good feeling to see that back. But
that's feast or famine, too.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, if you're off just slightly.
Oh, yeah, it's a risk, man. It's a big-time risk. But we were very fortunate. One time I tried to walk across, like, three ladders at the Houston, that Astrodome WrestleMania, and I was bummed out, man, because I didn't make it, and I failed. But ended up coming off, like, pretty good. We were okay.
And now we'll hear from a 2004 interview with Adam Copeland, also discussing the TLC match, how it helped them, but also the effect it took on his neck and the damage that he went through from all of this.
I feel like a healthy 31-year-old wrestler.
Important
big
distinction.
Difference.
How
big
the knees,
difference.
How the elbows, how's the shoulder?
You know what? Everything feels good right now. That could change by my match tomorrow in Detroit. Mm-hmm. That's just the nature of the beast that is called wrestling. The neck feels great and has since I came back, which is definitely a blessing because I didn't know what to expect. Thankfully, I had a network of guys. I could go to Chris. I could go to Lita. I could go to Rhino. And have almost like an AA meeting, you know, for degenerated necks and say, okay, guys, am I experiencing, is this right? Is this wrong? But it feels great. It feels really good coming back, you know, spraining the foot, breaking the hand, rupturing the groin. When I ruptured the groin, I finally said, okay, this is enough. What is going on here? My body was revolting. It had gotten normal. I was a normal 31-year-old guy by the time I had the year off.
Right.
Now I had to almost like dehumanize and become a wrestler again and uneducate my body to getting thrown around again.
Any misgivings about all the ladder matches and the matches that people say, you know, got you over?
Those matches got me to where I was in two respects. It got me onto an operating table, but it also got me to the point where I am at where I want to be in my career. Mm-hmm. I feel I'm now in a main event position. And without those matches, I probably wouldn't be. So there's pros and cons. Would I have gotten to where I am without them? I don't know. Would I have had surgery on my neck without them? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad I did them. Mm-hmm. I don't have any regrets. I think it taught me to work smarter now.
Right.
I think I'm much more intense and believable in the ring now. And if you see Chris Benoit and I in there, and you're going to see a fight, a wrestling match that looks like a fight as opposed to a stunt show, which I'll admit that we were guilty of doing, but also put in a position where we had to do it.
Mm-hmm. Those stunt show matches, the yin and yang, the shady side to the sunny side of the mountain, many say raise the bar too high for professional wrestling, and ultimately professional wrestling, as it goes through a downturn, is suffering because of those matches, the McFoley-Undertaker match, where he pitched off the cage, and all the E&C Hardy Boy Dudley matches with the ladders and the outrageous bumps. Some say that took wrestling back a step in the long-term picture because you conditioned an entire generation of fans to expect that this is what a professional wrestling match looks like. Now we're going to give you some mat-based wrestling with William Regal because we're concerned about the safety of our roster. You think in the big picture those matches helped advance professional wrestling or took it down a notch?
Well, I talk about that in the book, and I think in the short term, it definitely brought some extra popularity to an industry that was already popular at the time. And we didn't think of the long-term effects, not only on our own bodies, but on the industry as a whole. We just wanted to get noticed.
Yeah.
So we didn't think we were, you know, pulling, you know, the industry back in any respect. Do I think that it, in the long term, raised the bar too high? Hell yeah. I mean, We raised it past a point where you couldn't go any further, I don't think. And now you have guys on indie shows doing TLC matches, and that's not a place to do it. To me, you can still do a TLC match, but it's a WrestleMania. And even then, you have to be careful how high you raise it now. And we've tried to re-educate the people. And yeah, I mean, tough process. It is. And I think we've seen that it's a tough process. But thankfully, I think storytelling has come back. And I'm, like I said, partially responsible and guilty for the fact that storytelling kind of got put by the wayside. But also the storylines happening, what normally would have been a 4-month program is now a 1-week program. That's partially responsible for it too.
So there are two of our guests. Wait.
Wow.
Edge and Jeff Hardy weighing in on the TLC match.
Very cool.
So, quite the match, and certainly what most will remember from this SummerSlam 2000 event.
Yeah. These are the types of matches, these TLCs, that you could just like throw on at a party and leave on in the background, and then soon enough a crowd will probably gather around the TV. These are the types of matches that like don't really require, you know, proper understanding of psychology or like even having to follow the match that closely. They're kind of like a YouTube. I mean, I don't want to downgrade it to this, but like, you know, like a fail compilation on YouTube, or just like a skateboard video of like people like bailing. These are kind of like that, where you just see like human bodies fall through tables and take very high risk bumps, and they're so satisfying to watch.
Next up, Triple H and Stephanie are in the dressing room, and he's upset about the kiss. She says it meant nothing and says she was virtually unconscious. Kind of going into murky water, I guess.
Yeah.
That, here's Kurt taking advantage of a nearly unconscious woman, and says Angle took advantage of her, and tells her, Hunter says to stay away from Kurt, and says, Hunter, you are the only man for me. And this coming out and watching what would happen on the TV, there was like some weird segments the week after this where, so Stephanie disappears after this SummerSlam, and she's not at Raw the next night. So Hunter's all worried about Stephanie. And who comes into the dressing room to comfort Hunter but Chyna, who says...
Interesting.
She tells Hunter about why me and Eddie work so well, is that we trust one another. You need to trust Stephanie, Hunter.
Wow. Interesting.
And then it would be Stephanie getting very jealous of Hunter and Chyna. So...
Interesting.
Some weird stuff at this time in 2000. After, how do you come off a TLC match, Way? You do it with a thong stink face match, the first and only, to my knowledge. I don't think there will be a DVD on the thong stink face compilation. Nor did this...
Not from the WWE, at least.
Yes, nor did this make it into the Women's Evolution special, even as a example of where we were versus where we are. It was the Cat, Stacy Carter, accompanied by Al Snow, against Terry... with European champion Perry Saturn. It was not the European championship up for grabs. It was thongs. And
it was a stink face.
Putting thongs in others' faces. So this feud began when the Cat enlisted the help of Rikishi to give Terry a stink face, and therefore adopting the spot for their gimmick match. Terry comes out, and Saturn immediately covers her with a towel on their way to the ring. And Jim Ross calls this with Kat, quote, going deep in that crotch with that slam. This felt like Jim Ross just having a match off to have fun, which was pretty much what everyone, I guess, wanted. This was the more subdued Jim Ross after he got all his aggression out earlier with Taz. Saturn tries to carry Terry away, but Snow stops him. There's a Bronco Buster by Kat. Saturn then shoves the Kat down. Kat tries for a seated splash and misses. They get moved into the corner. Kat kicks her away and then headbutts the ref in the crotch. The Kat then hits Terry with head. Snow hits Saturn with it as well. And then Terry is placed in the corner and gives the stink face to her for the win at 3 minutes and 5 seconds.
The cat is victorious.
Yeah. I didn't mind this, man. I think after such an intense and violent match like TLC, I think some lewd, corny PG-13 attempt at, you know, lame sex show, I think is actually a really nice change of pace. I think, you know, you see two guys or you see six guys nearly beat themselves to death and then you want to see some ass and titties. And I think, you know, for this time, the Attitude Era, something like this had its place on the show.
If a DVD ever comes out with this match on it, your quote should be on the front.
There you go.
Of what you just said.
It helped, you know, provide a nice calm before the main event.
This was also the best timing ever of a waiting text message because as I'm watching this, my phone goes off and you were asking me about, you said, I'm about to go watch some of the G1 matches from this weekend.
And as you're like, watching the thongs.
What a contrast. Like, of all matches for you to message me announcing that you were about to go watch all the G1 matches from Sumo Hall. The APA were shown at WWF New York, tending to the bar, and they toast to Vince McMahon. This was also when you could send your cable bill in for free shit, including a pair of The Rock's sunglasses. Way, had you ordered this for $29.95, you could have got some cheap Rock sunglasses. Damn.
I missed out.
Never got into that habit of sending my cable bill into the company to prove that I bought this. Then we got a video. Oh, God. Talk about cleansing the palate before the main event. Up next, Kane and The Undertaker, part 500. This was when Kane came to the rescue of The Undertaker from Benoit, but then Kane chokeslams his brother on television and puts him through the ring all the way to hell, as Jim Ross yells, along with, why? Kane proclaims he's a monster, and he busts open Taker with a chair. What a feud. This was when The Undertaker was really finding his ring gear for the biker version. We got black jeans and a blue denim sleeveless top.
Yeah. This is what I always...
This was Dad Taker.
Yeah, I guess so. Or Old Navy Taker. Blue denim. Anyway, I always remember this look, and I always associate this look with the biker because this was the model that they used for SmackDown 2 on the PlayStation. They had Blue Denim Taker for that video game.
Taker meets up with Kane in the aisle, and they start fighting. Jim Ross promises this will be ugly. Promise fulfilled. And Kane gets a chair. Taker attacks him with punches to the body. Now, it's important to note that during this attack in the aisle, the bell rang to begin this match.
Did it actually ring?
It did ring.
Okay.
Taker is trying to rip the mask of Kane off, and he gets a piece of it. Kane then grabs...
Like the forehead he rips off.
The forehead portion, yes. Which doesn't look like the easiest thing to tear.
I assume they probably, like, maybe indented it or something.
Yeah. Kane grabs the steps and misses into the post with them on the floor. Taker then hits Kane with the steps and motions to the crowd, I'm going to pull his fucking mask off, which was also censored. Kane hits a low blow in the ring, and he's bleeding from the step shots, but because it's replacing the portion of his mask that was ripped...
It just looks like the mask.
It was the most ineffective blood I've ever seen in a match, because there was no way you could tell.
Yeah.
Unless the announcers pointed it out, which they did.
I suppose that was the idea behind the mask rip, was to allow Kane to do a blade job.
It had to have been, but talk about ineffective.
But yeah, it just looked like he filled out the portion of the mask that was missing.
It was like the identical shade of red.
Oh, yeah.
Taker spears Kane and mounts him. He's going for the mask again. And then Taker hits a low blow to stop a chokeslam, takes the mask as Kane leaves the ring. Like this is in Mexico and he's been ashamed that his face is being shown.
This would be a DQ in Mexico.
Well, it should have been a DQ, but we didn't even get that much because Kane runs to the back and Taker's music just starts playing. And we're done.
And it didn't help that JR didn't hear the bell and so was wondering the entire time if this match even had begun.
This was awful on many levels. It's an awful match at its core. It had a shit finish for a very well-promoted match with two push stars on a big pay-per-view.
Did the feud continue?
It didn't even fucking go anywhere with this mask feud. It's never led to, like, hair versus mask or anything like that. They were both involved in the four-way for the title the next month, so it continued in that sense. But this mask thing didn't get any kind of payoff to it.
They could have done hair versus mask.
They could have, but they didn't.
Taker was going to...
Taker lost his hair for nothing. He just showed up one day and had lost his hair.
Hmm.
I hated this. I thought this was the worst thing on this pay-per-view.
This might have been maybe the more of the calm before the drama.
At least the thong stink face match lived up to the stip, and they had a payoff. This had none. So this was actually worse to me than the Terry Cat match.
The finish was definitely whack. And
yes, Ross is saying, yes, the bell never rang. It did. And Taker just parades around with the mask. Kurt Angle is in the locker room with a portable phone. It's one of those... this is like one of those... I don't want to say like Zach Morris phones, but it was like one of those, you know, that you have the... Like this portable phone.
Oh, okay. Like a home...
No one can see.
A home cordless phone.
Yes, that's what it looked like.
Okay.
He makes a phone call, and... I mean, did we ever figure out... who this even was that he was calling?
It was Stephanie.
Shit. It was the very next segment we found. I'm just lost here. I'm sorry. The Kane Undertaker match threw me off. Stephanie is with Hunter and the phone rings. Yes. And she pretends it's her mom. And then Hunter wants to talk to Linda. And as soon as he takes it, the phone is hung up. And it's Kurt. I guess not wanting to engage. It would have been great if we had a split screen.
Kurt pretending
and Kurt
to
trying
Linda,
to be Linda.
And then Vince believing it. Or sorry, Triple H believing
Stephanie
it.
Stephanie wants a divorce.
And then Vince should talk to Linda on the phone too.
They had a video preview for the main event. There was a number one contender match with Kurt and Hunter, with both pinning Chris Jericho at the same time. Stephanie walking in on Hunter and Trish as we recapped. Angle then moving in on Stephanie. Stephanie proclaiming they're just friends. Hunter and Angle then make up, and they work together to take on the APA. But Stephanie gets hurt in the middle of all of this. Hunter takes her to the back, but then Stephanie sends Hunter back out to help Kurt, and then it's Kurt that walks out on Hunter, tends to Stephanie, and kisses Stephanie. I've never seen an angle replayed so many times, but it was a big thing that they were pushing.
Hot angle. I'm surprised it only took place 3 days prior on the SmackDown and not earlier.
Oh, but, lifetime in WWF stories,
yeah, I guess so.
At this point. Kurt comes out, and he says some people expect an apology for the kiss. He apologizes for not doing it sooner, and he did not win a medal by second-guessing himself. He is a giver.
You know, I'm really surprised at how diminished The Rock's role in all this was. He was not figured into this storyline at all.
He was just the champion defending his title. He had no involvement other than defending his title.
He held the belt. That's all.
Yeah. He really had no storyline at all.
Mm-hmm.
He continues saying he gave Hunter's wife the passion that he never could. And Hunter makes a quick entrance, doesn't go through all the water spitting, just goes right after Kurt. The bell has not rung yet. There's chance for Rocky. Hunter shoves Earl Hebner away. Angle clotheslines him and sends both of them to the floor as they fight around ringside. And they get onto the announce desk. And Hunter sets him up for a pedigree. And you've seen this in all the Don't Try This at Home videos. This used to be one of the staple scenes. And the desk gives out, and Angle knocks himself out. He completely is glazed over when you see him coming up, and Hunter goes for the sledgehammer as Rock makes his entrance.
It seemed like forever before The Rock came out, between the concussion and the thing. You could see the moment that the table collapses. Triple H is immediately checking on Kurt Angle. And I totally forgot that this was the match that this had occurred, because this changed everything. It changed the match completely. So Triple H, you could see Kurt is pretty messed up, and Triple H is kind of scrambling, trying to figure out what's going on with the referee, Earl Hebner, there. And so I'm assuming he was supposed to lay out Kurt so that he can grab the sledgehammer and just beat on The Rock solo anyway. But it seemed like it took forever before The Rock came out, so I'm sure everybody was still trying to figure out what exactly was up with Kurt Angle at this time.
Yes, and our third guest, when we finish this, we will hear from Kurt Angle in 2001 describing this match.
Wow.
And part of it, he notes, is that that spot was supposed to lead to him almost like playing as though he was concussed. So that...
Huh.
I don't know how that necessarily would have worked, but if that was the case, how much more confused would you have been trying to piece this together where...
I have no... Yeah.
And Kurt legit didn't remember any of this.
Yes.
This... Everything that happens from that spot on is a blur for this guy who is literally led through the match
and
by the others.
And so everything, I mean, I totally forgot that it was this match was the main event of this show. But seeing that spot and then knowing what was to come afterwards, watching this match in hindsight is just like...
How did this happen?
It's an incredible experience. So
This would never happen today.
Yeah, let's go on. Let's talk about
it. So Angle's taken out on a stretcher and Hunter chases them down, pulls Angle off of the stretcher. This guy is legit concussed at this point, and throws a pair of punches at him, and then Rock stops Hunter from doing any more.
Do you think that was an audible? Like, do you think they were legitimately taking him to the back, and then maybe Vince was like, hey, pull him back in, pull him back in? Like, I guess who knows, right? Only they'll be able to tell.
You can only guess, but it really felt like Hunter was not going to let this fuck up the match, and this dude had no business doing anything physical.
But Hunter wasn't going to do anything without Vince's say, right? Like, Vince would have been the one to make the call via the referee to pull the thing back.
There's only so much quarterbacking you can do when you're out there and you're kind of reworking this match in your head, knowing Kurt's a big part of it, and what
the guy's legit concussed, though. He couldn't do anything.
But if he was legit concussed and I'm Hunter, I'm not doing that fucking spot and throwing punches at the guy.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Like, that was nuts.
Yeah, it is. I mean, but it's also Triple H, so he could probably throw a punch at you without even feeling it. And also...
Well, he was going to... Like, when Rock cuts him off, he's getting ready to, like, throw the gurney towards ring. And he was going to fall off and couldn't control falling off the stretcher.
But I'll also say, thank God. Like, thank goodness it was Triple H in here. Who was the person, you know, a part of this whole thing with Kurt Angle? Because if you didn't have somebody with the ring awareness and the quick thinking and just the in-ring generalship of a Triple H, I don't know how this match would have turned out.
Stephanie is out. She's checking on Angle. And then Stephanie returns to ringside as Hunter's saying she's not supposed to be out here. Stephanie then gets the belt and misses Rock and hits Hunter with the belt. Rock then grabs her, but Hunter low blows Rock. Hunter gets the sledgehammer out, hits Rock in the body, and they did explain it's no disqualification in this three-way. Hunter is working over the ribs of Rock. I mean, if you're going to have this curveball, these two had done like 10 million matches together on every house show. I mean, with Austin out in 2000, these two were carrying the load, and it had so much, like, I mean, they can do a match together off the top of their head. I mean, you had the right two people to have to deal with this audible that's being called. Hunter continues to work the body. Rock comes back with a superplex after stopping Hunter on the turnbuckle. Lawler asks why Hebner is counting them and calls him an idiot because there's no count out in this. And Ross is just covering for Hebner, saying it's instinctual that he's counting them with both their backs on the mat. So while Lawler is just... throwing Hebner under the bus.
I like that, though. I mean, that should be the joy. I mean, the announcers have to retain credibility and point out inconsistencies, right?
Backstage, Stephanie is asking if Angle can go back to the ring.
And this is what confuses me, is what was the original intent with, what was the original storyline had Kurt not been injured, not been concussed? Would they have still shot this little vignette? Was this vignette called on the fly? Did they shoot this and write this whole thing on the fly and just shot it?
I can only guess, but I don't know if they would have done a stretcher job for a pedigree spot on the table. It seems like it would have been more likely that he just sold down there on the floor for so long and then got more involved. But this did kind of play its way into the story because this played off of like SmackDown it's Hunter who... Stephanie sends out to go help Kurt, and now it's vice versa with Stephanie sending Kurt back out to help Hunter.
Which is, again, like, makes this match so incredible in hindsight. Because
it's a fascinating match.
There's so much that it came across so well that if you didn't know Kurt was legit concussed, you wouldn't have thought anything was wrong. But knowing that Kurt was legit concussed and had no idea, he was, it was Weekend at Bernie's. You're essentially working out there with a dead body.
Had a good match in his sleep.
Yeah. And to know all that and to see things like this, shooting a vignette backstage, the level of
complication and the level of production that was involved in this whole thing is really incredible to try to study and think about what actually was supposed to occur.
So Angle is being pulled to the ring by Stephanie after Angle says, "I'll do it for you, Stephanie." And he ends up tripping the Rock, and Hunter then hits a pedigree. Hunter squarely looks at Angle on the floor as if to admit, "You better pull me off of here."
Yeah.
And Angle does, and he pulls Hunter to the floor.
Yes, this was actually – Kurt actually talked about this in another interview.
Yes.
Talking about how basically it was Stephanie out there basically also guiding him, telling him, mm-hmm. okay, when Rock Irish whips him over into the ropes, Kurt, grab his leg, and that's it. And so the guy had to be told move for move exactly what he had to do, and it took somebody like Triple H, like The Rock, and also Stephanie McMahon out there to help guide him along.
Angle throws Hunter into the steps, and then Angle goes on top of Rock and gets a near fall. And then Angle, this is crazy. I mean, he hits Rock with a belly-to-belly. Then a DDT is delivered to Angle. He kicks out. There's an Irish whip to Angle as he sends Hunter off the apron, hits him with a Rock bottom, and then Hunter pulls the Rock to the floor, and Hunter yells to Stephanie, "Get me the hammer." And Angle kicks Hunter, grabs the sledgehammer, and Stephanie is in the ring. Angle ducks a punch, and Hunter knocks out Stephanie, which would lead to Stephanie being taken off and then not showing up at Raw, and then Hunter is arrested on SmackDown for domestic abuse.
Wow. Even in this spot, in that same interview, Angle talks about how he was completely dazed, and it's the same spot we've always seen. You know, Triple H holds up, or Stephanie is behind Angle as The Rock is about to punch him, and then Angle ducks. But it was all Hunter holding onto Kurt Angle's head before delivering the punch and actually shoving Angle's head out of the way so that he could make him duck to complete the spot. So anyway, just some really incredible, fascinating stuff.
So Angle then hits Hunter with the sledgehammer. Rock breaks up an Angle pin attempt, and Angle is sent to the floor by The Rock, and Rock hits the people's elbow to Triple H and pins Hunter at 20 minutes and 11 seconds. A rare people's elbow win for The Rock, especially over someone like Hunter, which when you look at this three-way and the way things were positioned at Fully Loaded, you would have assumed Angle was taking the fall.
It was also a sledgehammer shot, too.
Yeah, that's right. Elbow. He also did succumb to that as well from Angle. So nonetheless, The Rock keeps the title. Angle was the story of this match, and he would be taken to the hospital that night, legit, and they did a CAT scan on him and ended up coming back. They gave him the night off on Monday, and then he did a match Tuesday and ended up being okay from this. But
no way would they be doing anything like that.
The match would have been off. He would have been out of the match instantly. There would be none of this today, which is a good sign.
Yes.
This was so archaic to watch. And Angle is taking Stephanie and checking on her. Rock stands on the big metal setup at the entrance and poses as Angle is just carrying Stephanie, and Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler are asking, "Where is Kurt taking Stephanie?" as the show ends.
This match, obviously not on the surface the prettiest of matches, but knowing the circumstances surrounding this and the incredible result that they came out with, I think it makes this every bit as impressive as a 5-star match that these guys could have possibly had. I mean, I was so impressed by it.
That's because Kurt was seeing 5 stars during most of this.
I was so impressed by it, by the people involved here, in particular Triple H, in particular Stephanie, in particular The Rock, even Earl Hebner, and I'm sure Vince McMahon. I would have loved if they had a camera back there in Gorilla as this whole thing was happening, just to see them think about how they could salvage this, how they could plan this, seeing Kurt's state at the time. I mean, this match to me is incredible.
Yeah, watching this match, this is one thing I would love to see some network features where you sit down the key players and we rewatch a match and we get that, because I had so many questions after this
match. Director's commentary for this match. That's something I don't know why they don't do more often. They used to do it a little bit for some of the DVDs, but I think for a network special it'd be perfect. You get the people who were involved in the match talking about their classic match as it's playing. I think for this match especially, I would love
Okay, before we get your official rating of SummerSlam 2000, let's hear from Kurt Angle. This, I believe, was one of Jason Agnew's first ever interviews in 2001 for The Law, chatting with Kurt Angle about the concussion and Hunter leading him through the match.
So you've been working a lot lately with Hunter Hearst-Helmsley, obviously. How is it working with Hunter?
Hunter, I consider the very best in sports entertainment. The guy, Triple H, is so knowledgeable. He's the kind of guy that can put a match together, a fine match with a great finish. He has the total package. He has an incredible look. He can talk on the microphone. He has tremendous athletic skills. And he's the kind of guy that when you're in there in a match, you can trust him completely that the match is going to go over okay. So he's the kind of guy with a lot of patience, and he has so much experience. Him and Undertaker are the two guys that you know the match is going to go very well when you're in there with them.
So let me take you back, Kurt. In a match with Hunter, when he did the pedigree spot on the table, now, you did get a concussion that night, I understand. So what was it like after that? Did Hunter take care of you? What went on that night?
That's where I actually answered that question before. You know, it was supposed to look like I got a concussion, and I actually did get a concussion. What happened is the table broke early, and Hunter had me in the pedigree, and when I dropped to the floor, my head hit the floor. So he wasn't able to let my arms go in time for me to protect myself. It's because the table broke too early. When I left, I came back, and I didn't know who I was or what I was doing. And Rocky and Triple H were in there, and they basically talked me through the whole match. And watching it on TV, wouldn't even know. And that's a lot of credit given to those guys because they're so experienced and so good at what they do that they basically, you know, cut the slack for me and made sure that I did all the right things. And they're so good at communicating in the ring that sometimes you don't even have to know what you're doing when you go in there. And that can be dangerous. But with those guys, they make it look good and they make you feel confident when you're in there. And I give a lot of credit to them because I still don't remember the match. I remember coming to in the ambulance later on that night. They were rushing me to the hospital to have a CAT scan. And I don't remember what happened before that. So, whatever happened, you know, I watched it the next day, and it looked like a great match, and I can't remember it.
So that was our third of three guests, Way. Wow. Kurt Angle, discussing why he thinks Triple H is one of, if not the best. And in 2001, he was.
He really was, man. Like this show, last show, and even thinking about what he would go on to do in early 2001 before the quad tear.
Yeah.
You know?
So, and that... Coming out of this show, it would continue the Hunter and Kurt storyline, which was red hot at this point. And then really, it just kind of ended at the September pay-per-view. It just, I think they could have got a lot more out of it. And it was just, you know, Hunter beat him and then Kurt wins the title the next month. Kurt was not handled the best in his navigation from mid-card to the main event, but did make it. But it was 2000 was a really interesting year to watch him kind of navigate his way.
He was still
up
so young
the
and,
card.
And was also still trying to find a style, wasn't he? Like he hadn't really, I thought he was very good, but probably not as good as he would end up being.
Oh, a year after
later.
This, at that SummerSlam, that's that great match with Austin. Yeah. And you just look at the improvements he made from 2000 to 2001. Mm-hmm. It's staggering.
Yeah.
How good he got at such a quick amount of time. Out of 10 way, I imagine this one's going to go very high.
You know, this was really one of the best, I mean, if not the best SummerSlam. I'm trying to think what else might have been as good at it as it. 2002 was really good. I have to be refreshed about what was exactly on that show, but I remember it being very strong. So I think this is probably one of the best SummerSlams that maybe the best SummerSlam they've done. It had two incredible high spot filled matches, and the rest of the undercard really was inoffensive. It wasn't necessarily great, but it also had Benoit Jericho in a great match. And then this main event...
Some are offended by that today.
Benoit Jericho?
Maybe. For other reasons.
Yeah, I guess. And this main event was just like... The drama was intense if you know the backstory going into it. So as a viewing, I really enjoyed this. I give it an 8.5 out of 10.
Yeah, I'll go 8. Just to be different from you. Another funny story I was looking back, because it's interesting for the TLC match that you associate with this, minus the Dudleys. I mean, Edge wrote a book, and this was a big part of it. The Hardys put out a book. Even Lita had a book come out. So I kind of was skimming through this, and Edge told this great story
about the day of the show. They're being told by a certain company official about, you know, guys, you got to minimize risk. You got to work smart and, you know, you got to think about your bodies and your health. That WWF official who gave him the speech that day, Shane McMahon. Awesome story. And on top of that,
the guy who's about to fall off.
Yeah, it was just priceless. Shane McMahon that was giving them the speech about being careful out there. And on top of that, that everyone in that match had been told the Hardys are winning this match. It's North Carolina. Mm-hmm. They're winning. And either the day of or the day before, Vince just decided it's too predictable that the Hardys win in North Carolina. So Edge and Christian win. And the Hardys were kind of bummed out about it. I think everyone thought the Hardys should win this one.
And though in hindsight, did it matter?
Do you
think about who won?
No.
When you think of these matches?
Right.
No,
You probably would have had a bigger post-match reaction with the Hardys standing tall.
But they all got over it by the end of this.
But it's funny that the ones you think of, I mean, there've been lots of the matches, but the ladder match at WrestleMania that year, TLC won, TLC, Edge and Christian won all of them.
Yeah. Which I think is a fun little, you know, stat.
Yes.
But again, like something that you don't,
it didn't really matter in the grand scheme of things. So, a really great pay-per-view. And it was enough that I was, you know, with these 2 week gaps between Review Away, I'm just a glutton Way. And then I watched Raw the next night, which I will say, Way, if you're going to, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but if you watch one match on that Raw the night after, I would watch the Kane match. It's legit. One of the better Kane matches I've ever seen. It's him and The Rock, and this crowd is going nuts for these near falls.
Wow.
Cool. It was like a good match, and it was on Raw, and it was at 1 in the morning on a Monday night.
He had to make up for this one, I guess.
Oh, he made up for it in droves the next night. It was certainly not. And then Taker shows up at the end of it. Mm. But nonetheless, that was SummerSlam 2000, and we're going to go to the Law message board. We have feedback to take, and we'll start off with Christian. Not that Christian. Christian Small. This show sure has some very memorable moments, but also has some very forgettable matches. I completely forgot that this show had 10 matches on it, and many not getting much time at all. It's kind of crazy that this year's show has an announced 11 by now, and it's way longer than this one. On the flip side, this show produced 3 of the most memorable moments in WWE: Shane's insane fall against Steve Blackman, which is still scary to watch. That guy has balls to do such things. The first TLC match was just as crazy and set a high bar. Also, that main event was awesome. Even after that nasty pedigree spot at the beginning, hurting Kurt, it was one of the better title matches, and the WWE were really on fire in 2000, and you can see why on this show.
All right, we got a McWhalen who says, SummerSlam 2000 was a packed 10 match card, and I remember ordering this in 2000 when my mom would order one or two pay-per-views a year for me and my brother. The first 3 matches were completely forgettable, and I forgot China won the IC title again on this pay-per-view. The next 4 matches, though, were all very memorable. The Taz Lawler match was no classic, but I remember 11-year-old me hating Taz during this angle and was thrilled when JR killed Taz with the King's Candy Jar. Though looking back, this was the beginning of the end for Taz as a wrestler. The funniest moment of the pay-per-view was King returning to the table and asking JR why his hand was bleeding and where was his candy jar. The 2 out of 3 falls match was awesome, and the TLC match just an epic clash, as I hated Edge and Christian as a kid and thought Jeff Hardy was the next big thing in wrestling. The Undertaker Kane match was garbage and probably their worst match ever. The main event was very good, as Angle was just gold in 2000 and The Rock was so over as a good guy.
Next up, we're going to go to David Duffenberg. This SummerSlam was one of my favorites. The TLC match obviously was out of this world and set a dangerously high bar for everybody to try reaching after that. Out of all the bumps in that match, the Matt Hardy bump where he just falls backwards out of the ring through the table is still the craziest to see. I would agree with that. One wrong move and he's either catching his feet on the ropes or smacking his head into the railing. That still falls second to the unprotected chair shots. The heat for Lawler and Taz was fun to relive. I forgot about that program and the crowd really got into it. The foreshadowing of the candy jar before the match was funny because I remembered the ending of it right when they mentioned the candy jar. What was the point of Undertaker ripping off Kane's mask? Did they even follow up on that at all during Raw? If my memory is right, Kane just had his mask back and it wasn't really brought up again. Overall, I give this 8.5 out of 10. The undercard wasn't anything to be impressed by, but the TLC and main event definitely made this very memorable.
He's got a whole box of masks, Kane.
Yeah, I mean, they sold them too, so he had plenty.
Terry from Mid Wales, UK. First time watching this show since it first aired when I was 12. I thought the SummerSlam was a pretty fun show to go back on with an insanely hot crowd. Creepy Kurt was a weird misstep with Kurt Angle at the time and didn't last too long outside of the Triple H feud, if I recall. It did set Hunter up nicely at the next pay-per-view, though, as the macho male pseudo-face that every guy could identify with some creep making a move on your girl. Fantastic TV at the time for my child brain. It was to the point where even my wrestling disapproving mom would sit down and watch these love triangle bits with me just for the soap opera. TLC 1 was a bit disappointing to go back on. It's far from a bad match, and I may be at fault having become so numb to some of the often repeated TLC spots over the years, since it doesn't match up to the sequel at the following WrestleMania, or even TLC Zero at the previous Mania. At the same time, JR did sell the emotion, the effort of all six guys and Lita was faultless, and that Jeff falling into a seesaw for Matt's face spot was impactful, to say the least.
Okay, now we go to Uncle D from the Cho. Can we please bring back the thong stink face matches? What an idea! Seriously, though, watching that women's match reminded me how far the WWE has come. I'm curious, though, were the women that bad at wrestling, or did the WWE just want to sell sex? I think both.
Yeah, I don't think they trained these girls to... Certainly not at the level that they train the girls now.
They were expected to go out there and do basics, but they were not out there to have good wrestling matches, which I know a lot of people just look back at this and maybe they're embarrassed by this. I mean... These women were very popular at the time. It wasn't the Sable level, but there was a time that this was extremely popular, and they were doing what the audience was buying, and they wanted. There was a time period for this, and it was. You know, I'm glad to see what it's matured into, but there was certainly a time when
taste changed.
Yeah, I mean, it's in a weird way. It's look what Bellator does. They wouldn't be doing this if there wasn't an audience for it, and it was the same at this time with the women as well, that they got reactions, and they overdid it. They did it to a point where people were numb to it, and it didn't have the same reaction. He just finishes there. TLC was awesome. I remember as a kid legit thinking the Hardys had died. Did anyone else notice Lita's head hitting the ladder? Yes.
David from Aberdeen, Scotland. I always remembered SummerSlam 2000 for being on a holiday in Tenerife and watching this pay-per-view while my parents complained that I wasn't outdoors in the sunshine, then forgetting the VHS version and then constantly pressing pause to try and see Kane's face. Looking back now, this show really is not as good as it seemed when I was younger, as this was one of the first pay-per-views I ever saw. Most of the matches are relatively short, with short build-ups in most cases. The best match on this card, personally, is TLC, although the 2 out of 3 falls match was a close second. The wrestlers at this time really did lay everything on the line every single night, and especially what Shane O'Mac did still amazes me to this day.
Okay, and the last one here, from Painkiller. I was 9. My dad taped this the night before, and I woke up to watch it. I remember tape trading this event around a lot for years afterwards, before it was destroyed by rain. I've always loved it, always will. I even have a soft spot for Taker and Kane. It's amazing what nostalgia can do for you. Even if you hated the match, it was the first match that Kane wore his singlet. Well, there. No small feat there. The first singlet wearing Kane. I'd love to know how you compare this event to Fully Loaded, the TLC Triple Threat Jericho Benoit versus the main events from Fully Loaded. Thanks, guys. Is there a show you would prefer one over the... These were two really great back-to-back pay-per-views when you were seeing this roster really grow and the talent. I mean, go rewatch the 99 SummerSlam and compare it to 2000. It's night and day, the work in the ring.
I think Fully Loaded was a great prelude to this, but this to me felt definitely like the more main event type of show compared to the two. I mean, look at the standouts of this one. The TLC alone, I think, makes the show that much more... interesting. I mean, if you're going to look at just comparing main events, obviously the one before didn't really have the hiccups that this one did, but I thought this one was the better show overall as a viewing experience.
All right, so that's going to bring Review Away to a close. I want to thank Kurt Angle for joining us 15 years ago. I want to thank Jeff Hardy from 2003 and Edge from 2004 for joining us, if they were not thanked at the time. Way?
They're teleporting back to their times.
Yes, yes. They're all saying, oh, no problem.
Yeah.
Cool. And Way, you are going to be back on the next Review Away, but I am not.
Where are you going to be?
You tried to unmask me, so I'm running and for cover to get a new mask. I will be off. I'm taking a rare... mini vacation.
You're taking an actual vacation?
I'm taking a few days off.
Are you going anywhere?
I will be going... I am going north of the city that weekend, yes.
Oh.
So I will have no internet access when
this
next Review Away goes up.
Okay, so what? I guess we'll talk about it more then, but are you going to be on any of the other shows?
I'll be here that week. I'm not going to miss Raw or SmackDown. Okay. I will be here for those. I'm just missing Review Away and the MMA report.
Well, you'll be sore, John.
And the law.
Because in your place will be one Braden Harrington and myself, and we will be talking about the Scooby-Doo... What's it called? Scooby-Doo mystery thing?
Cool.
Whatever. The WWE Scooby-Doo...
The new one.
The new one. Yeah.
And who's in it? Paige is in it? The Miz is in it?
I know nothing about it.
Okay.
So we'll all find out. Do go check it out. And Braden Harrington, of course, is a huge, huge fan of Scooby.
He's an expert.
He's got a big crush on Velma, I believe. Like it's like a weird kind of like creepy crush, I assume. So
Braden gets away with that stuff.
So we'll get to the bottom of that. And a fun little breakup from what this was.
It's a nice break from me. Let's be honest. That's what you were trying to say?
No, of course not.
I will be back the following Review Away, which will be, I guess, in 4 weeks.
Oh, my God.
And that is our anniversary show.
That is right. That is a short time away now.
So how do you want to do this? Are we going to state what format we're going to be doing this show in, or is that a surprise?
No, I think we're probably going to do the same thing as...
Our live viewing?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that worked out really well last year.
I liked it a lot.
We should probably do the same. So we'll watch it live. We'll put... audio track and or video track up on YouTube, and you can all join us and watch. So what show would you like to welcome us into your house to watch with you? That's what we're asking.
Yes. How should we do this? Are we going to put a thread up with people's – just open it up to anything?
What do you think?
Sure.
We kind of have a thread for all that stuff.
Yes.
But
it's called the request thread.
It's so intimidating because it's so large now, and Brad, of course, has been doing a great job keeping it together, but maybe people are requesting those shows, not necessarily thinking about what would be a great viewing experience.
Yes.
Should we open it up? Like, should it just be shows that we haven't done, or could it be any show?
That wait, like redo something?
Shows that
I didn't even think about that.
It's different.
Yeah, you're right.
We're not sitting down talking about it.
Open it up to anything.
We're asking what shows you want us to watch live. With you guys at the same time.
Yeah. Okay. Let's open it up to anything.
Okay. Let's make a new thread then.
Okay. We'll put up a thread, and if Brad's listening,
oh, yeah.
The following show, we're going to take something from the request thread. Okay. I promise.
Yeah.
We got to be more selective now because we space these out a bit. We build them up. We get three people here on this show. You know what? SummerSlam 2000. This was a big event.
So we'll put out a bunch of shows up there. If we see... You know, it obviously will help if we see more than one person pick a certain show. If something really stands out, then that makes our choice easier. If everybody's just kind of picking a random show, it makes it a little tougher.
Yeah. All right. So
any show that exists out there, we might have done it. It could be anything. Could be Heroes of Wrestling. Could be WrestleMania. Whatever. 17. Could be
a leaked copy of Mania 33.
Yep. Could be. What's a really...
It cannot be China.
Oh, yeah. No. It can't be that. No.
It cannot.
Yeah. It could be... what's the most obscure show we've done?
Louis Theroux?
Yeah. Not even the most obscure one. I feel like we've done some documentaries that have been even more obscure.
Oh. I mean, we reviewed Ring Ka King.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been all over the place. We've reviewed a lot since September of 2009.
Could be Scooby-Doo if people wanted to see us.
I'll veto that. Okay, so we'll put a thread up, and you guys can all chime in with what you want us to review, open to anything in the galaxy.
And when will we announce it? Next week, I guess, while you're away?
Or 2 weeks, when the next review.
Yeah.
You guys announce it on the Scooby-Doo show, what we're doing for the anniversary.
All right, cool.
So there you go. That will be let's get the dates out there so people can keep track. Braden and Way will be back with the Scooby-Doo review on Friday, September 2nd, and the anniversary show will be September the 16th. Mm-hmm. That wraps it up for us. Special start time for The Law this Sunday night, 11:30 p.m. Eastern time. We'll be on for 2.5 hours. Full reviews of SummerSlam, TakeOver. We'll probably chat about the ROH pay-per-view as well that's going on. Evolve has a pair of big shows this weekend as well with Cody Rhodes working with them. Super J Cup, UFC 202. It is an insane weekend. And Way's leaving town. He's hanging out with friends.
Yeah. No, I'll watch all of it.
I know. You'll catch up at some point.
Not as much as you will. But I'll
well,
watch.
You will hear Ray's voice next Monday night on Review of Raw, which you can send in your 30-second promos for a chance to win a Pro Wrestling Tees tee by using the hashtag PWTs promo.
PWTS promo.
Just send us a 30-second wrestling promo, and there's a good chance you'll win a T-shirt.
Yeah.
Just be a little
There's
creative.
A very, very, very good chance, if you even put in the effort, you will probably win a T-shirt.
Okay. All of our shows are up, liveaudiowrestling.com, and go to youtube.com/liveaudiowrestling. We just put up a 30-minute preview of SummerSlam with Dan Lavransky and Jimmy Corderas previewing all of the matches for Sunday. Check that video out, and we'll speak with you on Sunday night.
Come on, Rick Nick! Come get a closer look!
King and took out.